Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Courier for Sunday, April 18th, forecast today high in the mid-60s. Looks partly cloudy out this morning, low in the upper 30s tonight. Eunice and Thomas Pinge and I here to attempt to read some of the things in today's Courier, Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier.
End of watch. Community mourns as slain State Patrol Sergeant Jim Smith laid to rest. At first, the large gymnasium with hundreds of chairs appeared mostly empty as Iowa State Patrol Sergeant Jim Smith's flag-draped casket was marched in by the patrol's honor guard. Then, thousands of law enforcement personnel from across Iowa walked in, two by two, for more than half an hour. They saluted Smith's casket and filled every chair in nearly all of the Independence High School gym's bleachers Friday morning for Smith's funeral. Smith, 51, died of a single gunshot wound April 9, and he and other law enforcement attempted to make an arrest in Grundy Center. He was laid to rest Friday in Independence in front of many officers who knew him, as well as many who didn't. For those of you who don't know Jim, I can still remember the first time I met Jim. After meeting him, I remember being a bit confused. He was 51, but he looked 35, and he acted like five, said Paul Hempner, interim pastor for Jessup Bible Fellowship, where Smith and his family attended church. I was also confused because he was this mixture of stern law officer and comedian. Smith's great love was his family, including wife Kathy, son Xander, and daughter Jaslyn. Speakers at his funeral said he also loved his job as a state trooper, serving on the patrol's tactical team since 1994. And he loved music, playing drums, by his own admission, not very well, joked former pastor Zane Hall at Sunday's services. He thought his drumming ability was not that great, but it was pretty good, but it was good enough for Jesus, and that's all that mattered, Hall said. Speaker after speaker noted Smith was dedicated to his Christian faith above all. Jim prayed before every meal when we stopped for breakfast or breaks. Every moment of him was centered on Christ, said Trooper John Stickney. Jim's legacy will leave a mark on all of us by the way he believed in humanity. He was humble, Patrol Colonel Nathan Polk said, and had to be talked into accepting a supervisory role on the tactical team, a role he held for 5 years. He always wanted to be the number one man in the door, said Folk. His struggle becoming a leader on the tactical team was that he would have to give up his number one position. His priority was protecting his people. In a statement Friday afternoon, Folk, speaking for the patrol, said the agency was honored and blessed to have served with Smith, noting his passion and compassion that touched countless lives. All of us in Post 10 are grieving today, Stickley added. Jim was our friend, our supervisor, and he was a mentor to many. Matthew Perez, Smith's former pastor, remembered how he and Smith would joke about their wives' shopping trips to Kohl's, laughing about how the receipt showed how much money their wives had saved them. But he also said Smith, where does it go from there? Smith was the real deal, noting he was the type of person whose public-facing persona matched his private one. His one voice, said Folk, was chocolate milk, which was a treat after a big accomplishment. There was so much that seemed senseless, Perez said. I know that one day God will wipe away every tear, but it does not, in this moment, make this event less tragic or less horrific. Perez noted he found a parallel in the untimely death of Jesus Christ, in that both lived in the service of others. We thank God for the time we had with Jim, the laughs, the smiles, the memories, and the love, Perez said. A final 10:42 police code for end of watch was played before Smith's casket was taken out, with a dispatcher repeatedly calling Smith's call number 462. There is no answer from 462, the dispatcher said, his voice breaking. Your brothers and sisters in law enforcement will forever watch over your family. May you rest in eternal peace. That's the end of that article.
Sad.
Yes, very.
Waterloo takes up fireworks ban again. After being pushed back twice, a fireworks ban in Waterloo is again on the agenda at Monday's City Council meeting. The ban was tabled April 5th on a 6-1 vote after Councilman Dave Boson recommended officials work with Waterloo Police Department on enforcement mechanisms. Before that, it was postponed on a 4-3 vote March 15th when Boson suggested Waterloo partner with nearby cities on a fireworks policy. Mayor Quentin Hart said at the time he was waiting to hear back from officials in surrounding communities. Most city council members supported the ban when it was first proposed this year at a work session. Constituents has complained of rowdy celebrations, billowing smoke, and rule-breaking residents last summer. The current ordinance lets people set off fireworks July 3rd through the 5th annually. They can be used from noon to 11 p.m. July 4th and from noon to 10 p.m. July 3rd and 5th. Added regulations passed in August set additional parameters like limits on fireworks, noise levels, elevation, and debris cleanup. After Iowa law changed in 2017 to allow fireworks to be sold and used, Waterloo officials banned the use of explosives. The city then decided in 2019 to allow fireworks use. Councilman Pat Morrissey previously criticized the ban for holding out the forbidden fruit to people. Iowa law would allow Waterloo residents to buy fireworks in the city, but local ordinance would ban their use. Councilwoman Margaret Klein, who introduced the proposal, was among several officials who said fireworks caused problems for residents, including triggering people with conditions like asthma or PTSD. We think we've had experience with fireworks. We've begged people to be responsible. It hasn't worked out the way we want it to, Klein said previously. I'm asking for a little mercy on our people. People who want to comment or attend Monday's City Council meeting can contact City Clerk's office or register online.
Britain's Prince Philip laid to rest. Sitting by herself at the funeral of Prince Philip on Saturday, Queen Elizabeth cut a regal but solitary figure, still the monarch, but now alone. The Queen sat apart from the family members at the simple but somber ceremony at Windsor Castle in accordance with strict social distancing rules during the coronavirus pandemic. But if the ceremony had been for anyone else, at her side would have been her husband of 73 years, who gave a lifetime of service to the crown. Wearing the face mask, the Queen was dressed all in black except for the diamond brooch that flashed on her left shoulder, a piece she had often worn on engagements with her husband. The monarch's four children, Prince Charles, Prince Anne, Prince Andrew, and Prince Edward, sat nearby, as did the Queen and Philip's eight grandchildren. The stripped back service made their loss somehow more personal for people who often live their lives in public. Just 30 mourners were allowed to attend the service for the prince, who died April 9 at the age of 99. The entire royal procession and funeral took place out of public view within the grounds of the castle, a 950-year-old royal residence 20 miles west of London, but was shown live on television. Hundreds of people lined the streets outside the castle to pay their respects to the prince. Some held Union flags and clutched flowers, while others wore custom face masks featuring the royal's photo. We have been inspired by his unwavering loyalty to our queen, by his service to the nation, said the Commonwealth, by his courage, fortitude, and faith. The death of Windsor David Connor, who said in his call to prayer, the nation honored Philip with a minute silence observed across the United Kingdom at 3 p.m., its beginning and end marked by a gun fired by the King's Troop Royal Horse Artillery. The final shot signaled the start of a funeral service steeped in military and royal tradition, but infused with the Duke's personality. Philip's body was carried to St. George Chapel at the castle on a Land Rover that the Prince himself had specially designed. It was followed by members of the royal family, including the Prince's William and Harry, who made their first public appearance together since Harry and his wife Meghan gave a controversial interview to U.S. television host Oprah Winfrey, in which they discussed the difficulties of royal life and how the two brothers had grown apart. The procession traversed the grounds of Windsor Castle, passing military detachments arrayed under bright blue skies. Inside the medieval Gothic chapel, the setting for centuries of royal weddings and funerals, the service was quiet and without excessive pageantry. Philip was deeply involved in planning the ceremony. At his request, there was no sermon. There were also no eulogies or readings in keeping with royal tradition. Former Bishop of London, Richard Cartus, who knew Philip well, said the 50-minute service reflected the preferences of the prince, who was a man of faith but liked things to be succinct. He was at home with broad church, high church, and low church, but what he really liked was short church, he told the BBC. Philip's coffin was draped with Philip's personal standard, topped with his admiral and the fleet naval cap and sword. The sword was given to him by his father-in-law, King George the Sixth, on the occasion of his marriage to the Queen in 1947. The monarch offered her own touches to the day. Ahead of the funeral, Buckingham Palace released a photo of the Queen and Philip smiling and relaxing on blankets in the grass in the Scottish Highlands in 2003. The palace said the casual, unposed photo was a favorite of the Queen. Composing a wreath atop the coffin were flowers chosen by the Queen, including white lilies, small white roses, white freesia, white wax flower, white sweet peas, and jasmine. A note from the monarch was attached, but its contents were not disclosed. The funeral reflected Philip's military ties, both as a ceremonial commander of many units and as a veteran of the Royal Navy who served with distinction during World War II. More than 700 military personnel took part in the commemorative events, including army bands, royal machine buglers, and an honor guard drawn from across the armed forces. Lieutenant General Roland Walker, regimental lieutenant colonel of the Greander Guards, said his unit was honored to take part because of its close relationship with the prince. Philip served as regimental colonel of the guards, its honorary leader, for 42 years. This is a privilege, he told the BBC, because my understanding is he planned this, so we're here because he wanted us to be here, and that, I think, down to the junior guardsman, is a known fact. William and Harry were part of the 9-member royal contingent, although their cousin, Peter Philip, walked between them. There was no obvious tension between the brothers, whose relationship has been strained since Harry's decision to quit royal duties and to move to California. After the service, they walked back to the castle together, seeming to chat amiably. Their appearance at the service stirred memories of the 1997 funeral of Princess Diana, when William and Harry, then 15 and 12, walked behind their mother's coffin, accompanied by Philip. As Philip's coffin was lowered into the royal vault, a Royal Marine bugler sounded action station, an alarm that alerts sailors to prepare for battle. Included in the service at Philip's request, he will rest there, at least until the Queen's death, alongside the remains of 24 other royals, including King George III, whose reign included the years of the American Revolution. The Queen and Philip are expected to be buried together in the royal burial ground on the Frogmore Estate close to Windsor Castle. For decades, Philip was a fixture of British life, renowned for his founding of the Duke of Edinburgh's award program that encouraged youths to challenge themselves, and for a blunt-spoken manner that at times included downright offensive remarks. He lived in his wife's shadow, but his death has sparked a reflection about his role and new appreciation for many in Britain. To be perfectly honest, I didn't realize the extent of what his life had been, what he had done for us all, said Vive Daves, who came to pay her respects in Windsor. He was a marvelous husband, wasn't he, to the Queen and to the children? Just remarkable, and I don't think we will see that. I'm sorry. I don't think we will see the like again.
NAACP president named to Cedar Falls Racial Equality Task Force. An eighth person will be appointed to a new task force designed to address the metro area's reputation of being a bad place to live for black residents. Latonya Graves, president of the Black Hawk County NAACP, will join seven other new members on the 12-member task force, according to documents provided in advance at Monday's city council meeting. Graves will become the sixth black member. Mayor Rob Green noted in a memo to council that an additional female member has been identified for inclusion in the group, and noted he may submit her name at a later date. The other new members are Will Frost, Diego Hernandez, Paul Lee, Wilfred Mickey Johnson, Andrew Petit, Lisa Sesterheim, and Felicia Smith-Knowles, City Council members Frank Dara and Kelly Dunn, as well as Human Rights Commissioners Willie Barnum and Melissa Heston, make up the Task Force Executive Committee. These appointees were specifically nominated by the Executive Committee due to their community leadership, influence, critical thinking, skills, and personal perspectives and experience dealing with racial equity issues in Cedar Falls, Green wrote. Also on Monday's agenda, Green nominated two members to the city's Human Rights Commission, which will fill the two remaining vacancies on the commission if approved by council. Ashawn Vetjay, a management partner attorney at Ball, Kirk & Holm in Waterloo, who has recently appeared before council to argue against zoning regulations, would like to lessen parking on College Hill, will fill out a term ending July 1st, 2023. Mario Baserto, the former director of El Centro Latino Americano and co-founder of Nuestra Raza Community Center in Waterloo, will fill out a term ending July 1st. The council will consider a proposal by, also in addition, the council will consider a proposal by Wes Geisler to remodel his College Hill neighborhood duplex with one more bedroom on each side. Geisler had previously been denied a permit to remodel the duplex, which had a total of 8 bedrooms. His current proposal would move his duplex's occupancy from 4 to 6 bedrooms and was approved by Zoning and Planning Commission last week, which noted the new proposal was in line with the rental occupancy in the area.
Creative displays. Group your houseplants to design artistic vignettes that become part of your home's decor. As you add plants to your home, take time to think about how they relate to the rooms around them. A single show-stopping plant can add sculptural appeal to a blank corner, or a grouping of houseplants can serve as a design focal point in front of a window. Sarah Partka, owner of the Farmer's Daughter's Garden Center in South Kingston, Rhode Island, loves helping her customers find plants that will thrive in their spaces. Her business features greenhouses after greenhouse full of inspirational houseplant groupings. Success is a balance between your likes and the plant's needs, she says of selecting just the right plant. Here are Sarah's tips for creating eye-catching plant displays in your home. Group plants with similar light preferences. Shade-loving plants such as ferns and crotons should dwell in locations where light levels are low and sun-loving succulents are happy to soak up the sunbeams on bright windowsills. This arrangement allows all players in your display to look their best. Experiment with texture and shape. Houseplants come with all sorts of leaf surfaces such as hairy, felted, smooth, or shiny. They also display diverse leaf shapes. Get several types into the act in your arrangements to create more dynamic displays. Mix interesting silhouettes and build on their interrelationships. For example, consider grouping a mini tree-shaped standard beside crawling and sprawling plants to create a scene that reads as a multifaceted indoor garden design. Play with color by showcasing leaves in a variety of hues. Various shades intensifies, create color echoes that can be thrilling. Green is the obvious base color, but you can also work within the blue-gray spectrum. For a cohesive look, stay within the same plant family, such as all ferns or only prayer plants. Add drama with interesting containers. Rather than repeating matching containers, find a common thread and present variations on that theme. For example, containers might share a similar texture, complementary colors, or some other unifying feature. Vary heights in your display. If two plants are roughly the same height, place one on a pedestal. A block of wood does the trick to add visual interest. Add personality to plant groupings with accent pieces. Consider displaying a favorite paperweight, seashell, clock, mini figurine, or a collection of beach stones next to your plants. Whatever adds personal meaning to a tabletop display.
Flag offends neighbors, but the vulgar banner is protected under protected speech under the First Amendment. Evansdale, a flag flowing in the front yard of a home has some residents riled up, but officials say there's nothing they can do about it. A resident of the home at 524 Evans Road is flying a flag with profane language and an anti-Joe Biden sentiment under the United States flag. It reads, blank Biden, and blank you for voting for him. The Evansdale Police Department said it has received multiple complaints about the Biden flag, which some residents find offensive. It's protected by the First Amendment, and there's not much that can be done about it, said Evansdale Police Chief Michael Dean. Evansdale Mayor Dick Dewater also has received complaints about the flag. It's definitely protected speech, but it's definitely offensive to many of our residents, he said. Politics aside, offensive language is offensive language. According to the Blackhawk County Assessor's Office, Steve and Cindy Coleno are the owners of the home. Steve Coleno declined to comment to the Courier. Evansdale resident Laura Edmondson said she is appalled by the flag, which is near a grocery store on one side of the city's main roads. When I go to buy a source of media such as music, movies, magazines, books, and so forth, they all come with a warning. I'm driving down my road, and then I see the trigger word that qualifies such warning labels on a flag with no warning, Edmondson said. If it comes to warning labels and consequences and all other forms of media, it should in this situation as well. Blackhawk County Attorney Brian Williams said the language is not considered obscene under Iowa code. There's nothing in the state code that comes close, he said. Iowa Code Chapter 728 defines obscene material such as any material depicting or describing the genitals, sex acts, masturbation, excretory functions, or sadomasochistic abuse, which the average person taking the material as a whole and applying contemporary community standards with respect to what is suitable material for minors would find appeals to the prudent interest, prurient interest in patently offensive in the material, that's a long sentence, taken as a whole, lacks serious literary, scientific, political, or artistic value. While Dean agrees with concerns that it reflects poorly on the community, it's still constitutionally protected, he said. A Facebook post said the city of Evansdale stated Dewater researched similar cases that went as far as the U.S. Supreme Court. The post discusses the landmark case Cohen versus California in 1971. Paul Robert Cohen was convicted with disturbing the peace by wearing a jacket displaying the words blank the draft in the Los Angeles courthouse in the 1960s. The case advanced to the U.S. Supreme Court, which reversed the conviction and deemed the government cannot criminalize the display of profane words in public spaces, citing while the particular four-letter word being litigated here is perhaps more distasteful than most others of its genre, it is nevertheless often true that one man's vulgarity is another's lyric. The ruling set a precedent using in future cases concerning the power of states to regulate free speech in order to maintain public civility, the Post said. Rita Bettis Austin, legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, agreed. Political speech, even if it's expressed in unartful, unpopular, or offensive ways, is at the heart of the First Amendment. Our Constitution was designed to protect debate at the fringes. Bettis Austin also said popular speech doesn't need First Amendment protection because the government doesn't try to restrict it. It's the offensive, unpopular, sometimes even hurtful speech that gets targeted for censorship by the government, and that the First Amendment is aimed at protecting. Remember that if the government can restrict what your neighbor says, it can restrict what you say too.
Nine health benefits of gardening. Plant a garden and get ready to reap the healthy rewards. And we're talking more than just farm fresh peas and carrots. Studies show that gardening can keep you happy and healthy from head to toe. No green thumb required. Sure, growing your own tomatoes or peppers is an inexpensive way to eat healthy, and nothing perks up a salad like a handful of freshly picked herbs. But gardening delivers a bushel of other benefits as well. Research shows it can reduce stress, fight heart disease, and even boost your memory. That's no small potatoes. Lowers stress. I threw myself into gardening when I was getting a divorce. There's no better therapy, says Tina Shoup, a Vermont lawyer who has been growing her own vegetables, herbs, berries, and apples for 30 years. It's true. Home more, stress less. A 2017 review of more than 20 studies found that regular gardening reduces tension as well as anger, fatigue, and anxiety. One reason? Gardening gets you outside, a natural mood booster. It's one small study. Researchers compared outdoor gardening with indoor reading for stress relief. After 30 minutes, both groups reported better moods, but cortisol tests showed that stress levels had dropped much more for the gardeners and their sunny moods lasted longer. Two, protects against dementia. Grow a garden, grow your brain. That's what researchers at UCLA and the University of Pittsburgh found in a 2016 study of nearly 900 older adults looking at questionnaires and MRI scans from the 30-year cardiovascular health study. The scientists found that doing more physical activities like gardening, dancing, and riding an exercise bike actually upped brain volume in several areas, including the hippocampus, a part that controls memory. The people whose brain size increased from exercise cut their Alzheimer's risk in half. Three, builds muscle strength. It's no secret that gardening works all the major muscle groups, legs, arms, back, core. Four, helps you eat more vegetables. Not a beans fan? Try planting them and see if you don't change your mind. Once you've nurtured and something from a seed, you're more likely to pile it on your plate. That goes for little picky eaters too. Multiple studies suggest that kids who learn to garden eat more fruits and vegetables. 5. Nourishes the senses. A flourishing garden does more than feed your body, it feeds your senses. That may sound like a warm, fuzzy talk, but scientists take it seriously. 6. Eases depression. Helping things grow can do more than boost a mood. In a small 3-month study of people with clinical depression, working in a garden improved their symptoms. 7. Fights heart disease. Want to be kind to your ticker? Plant a garden. In a 12-year Swedish study of 4,000 older adults, researchers found that physical activities like gardening help cut the risk of heart attack or stroke by up to 30%. 8. Maintain healthy weight. Think puttering in a garden isn't much of a workout? You'd be surprised. For a 150-pound person, 1 hour of hoeing, weeding, and digging zaps 324 calories. Some studies also suggest that compared with non-gardeners, gardeners tend to have lower body mass indexes. That's a big deal, since a higher BMI can increase your risk of high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, and other serious health problems. 9. Improves quality of life. Plain and simple, gardening makes you happy, In a survey of older adults by Texas A&M and Texas State Universities, gardeners reported more optimism and energy, better health, and greater life satisfaction than non-gardeners.
You're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Courier for today, Sunday, April 18th. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service, through blind. Now a look at the obituaries.
Waterloo. Oliver J. Troop, 88, of Chandler, Arizona, formerly of Waterloo, died February 3 in Phoenix. A memorial service will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 21, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. The funeral will be live-streamed on Sacred Heart Church Facebook page, and an interment will be at 3 p.m. in Long Grove Cemetery, Maynard, where full military rites will be conducted by Lundby Carpenter Post 245, American Legion and Iowa Army Honor Guard. Visitation 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 20th at Hagerty Wyckoff Garrett Funeral Service on West Ridgeway, and a 7 p.m. vigil service. Visitation will continue at the church for an hour before service on Wednesday.
Waterloo. Joseph N. Wagner, 75, of Waterloo, died February 1st. Memorial service is 10:30 a.m. next Saturday at Hagerty Wyckoff Garup Funeral Service on South Street, with interment in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation for an hour before services at the funeral home on Saturday.
Joanne Vance passed away peacefully at her home in rural Fairbank, April 16th, 2021. Funeral service 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 23rd, 2021 at Woods Funeral Home. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 22 at Woods Funeral Home. And due to the COVID-19 pandemic, you're asked to wear masks and maintain proper social distancing. Memorials directed to Cedar Valley Hospice, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, Wounded Warriors Project, or your favorite charity.
Kevin John Kocher, K-O-C-H-E-R, 61, formerly of LaPorte City, passed away April 11th in Austin, Texas. A memorial service will be held Monday, tomorrow, at 11 a.m. at First United Methodist Church in Round Rock, Texas.
Waterloo. Donald G. Hires, 96, of Waterloo, formerly of Fort Dodge, died Tuesday, April 13th at North Crest Specialty Care Facility under the care of Unity Point Hospice. Services will be 11 a.m. Monday, April 19th at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation from 4 to 6 p.m. today, April 18th, at Hagerty Wyckoff Garrett Funeral Service on West Ridgeway, where there will be a 4 p.m. rosary. Visitation will continue at the church for an hour before services on Monday.
Waterloo. Marlene Marie Gerholt, 83, of Waterloo, died in Nebraska of natural causes. Private family services tomorrow at Richardson Funeral Home, within interment in the Fairview Cemetery, both in Cedar Falls.
Ronald Eugene Jewell, age 79, passed away Wednesday, March 17th, 2021, at Hospice of the Valley, a Surprise Pavilion Care Center. Visitation will be at Dahl Van Hoefschool Funeral Home on Friday, April 23, from 5 to 7 p.m. Military honors and celebration of Ron's life will take place at Dahl's Funeral Home on Saturday, April 24, at 10 a.m., followed by burial at Fairview Cemetery. Attendees must bring and wear a mask, of course, and donations, I think, to the Care and Share at Wesleyan Church, and to help Ron's legacy of giving to those who need.
Waterloo. Eunice B. Cook, 95, of Waterloo, died at Manor Care Health Service in Waterloo. Worked for 20 years at Santa Claus Industries and 20 years at Yonkers. Private family graveside and burial will take place in Gardner Memory Cemetery in Waterloo. Visitation 4 to 5 p.m. April 21st at Locke Funeral Home. Memorials directed to Hospice Compassus or First Baptist Church of Waterloo.
Ron Stefferin, 79, died Sunday, April 11th at home, surrounded by family. He was under the care of Unity Point Hospice. Private family services were held on Thursday, April 15th. Memorials directed to the Western Home Communities.
Joanne P. Maurer, 81, of Dewar, died Thursday at Mercy One North in Mason City. Lifelong resident of Dewar, served as postmaster for 32 years, known as the Stamp Lady, later in life also known as the Pie Lady. Mass at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 20th at St. Francis Catholic Church, Barclay, with burial in Church Cemetery. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, tomorrow, at Hagerty Wyckoff Corrupt Funeral Service on South Street, 4 p.m. Rosary.
Waterloo, Cleo Elbert Proven, 73, of Waterloo, died Thursday. A celebration of life will be scheduled later for this summer.
Kenneth J. Kaas, K-A-S-S, 71, of Dunkerton, died at Unity Point Allen in Waterloo. Private family funeral services on Wednesday. Friends are welcome to join the family at the cemetery for the burial. Public visitation Tuesday, April 20th at White Funeral Home in Jessup, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. with parish rosary at 4 p.m. Memorials directed to Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Kurt Jesse Schmelzer passed away on April 15th, 2021, his 62nd birthday. Kurt will be remembered for his kind heart, wary jokes, jovial laughter, and award-winning talent for home brewing beer. A celebration of life will be held Friday, April 23rd, 3 p.m. at Gateway Park, Cedar Falls. Please bring camping chairs, and a memorial fund has been set up.
Waterloo, Lida Ann Zimmerly, 84, of Waterloo, died this past Wednesday at Friendship Village Retirement Center. Born in Raleigh at Independence High School, certified dental assistant, then stay-at-home mother, later worked with medical offices, services 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 21st at Locke Funeral Home, Waterloo, with burial in Mount Hope Cemetery in Independence. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 20th, with a 7 p.m. Eastern Star service at the funeral home.
Waverly, Sherry Eddy, 62, of Waverly, passed away on Friday, April 16th, at her home in Waverly. Memorial service will be held on Wednesday, April 21, at 11 a.m. at Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly, with Pastor Alan Bree from Unity Point Hospice officiating. The family will greet friends an hour prior to the service. Memorials directed to Unity Point Hospice and Kaiser Corson of Waverly is assisting the family.
Julie Ann Branstead Lacey, affectionately known as Jules, Great Jules, or Great Julie Bestie, passed away in Arizona April 10th, survived by her former husband 30 years. Born in Forest City, outstanding cook, handwriting, sense of style, Scandinavian roots, and don't say unconditional anything about local services. Cedar Valley Hospice could be a recipient or organization close to your heart.
Mark Lee Miller passed away April 14th, 2021, after a long battle with Lewy body dementia. It says here, his last act of selflessness was to donate his brain to the Brain Network for further study of Lewy body dementia. In lieu of flowers, request donations to Mark Miller to the Brain Support Network. A celebration of life will be held this summer. And one more. Waverly, Dale Eugene Clewell, 63, of Waverly, passed away on Thursday, April 15th, following a farm accident on his farm. Let's see. So, visitation will be from a funeral services on the 21st at 10:30 a.m. Visitation from 4 to 8 on Tuesday, April 20th at Kaiser Korsen Funeral Home in Waverly, and an hour prior to the service. Cremation will follow, and memorials directed to Dale's family for later designation.
Thus ends the reading of the obituaries. Onward to the important things. A couple of comic strips. First of all, Blondie. Dagwood's sitting at his desk in the office, not the computer. He hears a big yell from the other room, Bumstead! And of course, it's his boss, Mr. Dithers. Dagwood's hair is just standing straight on end. It just startles him. Wonder it didn't wake him up. Next panel. I'm right here, boss. What do you need? He goes into Mr. Dithers' office. Mr. Dithers kind of sitting on the edge of his blue office chair, leaning ahead with his elbow on his desk, and says, nothing, my boy. I figured out that yelling your name was very relaxing. Next panel, Dagwood's got his hands on his hip, wearing a white shirt with a red bow tie and black pants, brown shoes. Bumstead says, relaxing? Mr. Dithers says, now turned with his arms crossed in the chair, wearing a black vest and white shirt and red tie, a red polka dot tie. You bet. Go ahead. Give it a shout. Bumstead says, Bumstead! And Mr. Dithers says, come on, Bumstead, you can do better than that. Bumstead, he yells, attaboy, and Mr. Dithers claps. Next panel, Dagwood's come home to Blondie and the dog. Blondie's hands is on her hip. She's wearing a knee-length black skirt, white blouse, I suppose, with a black crump. Anyway, and Dagwood says, you're not going to believe what I learned at work today. Next, onward to Dennis the Menace. Oh, they're standing at the door. Everybody's wearing swimming suits. The kids are. Margaret says, hi, everybody. Come on in. They're wearing their swimming suits. They must be going. They're going through the house to the backyard. The pool is amazing, she says. You guys are going to love it. They go to the backyard and look at the pool. We just put in this diving board in yesterday, she says, with a high dive, and it's a fairly high diving board. Wow, a high dive, Gina says. Two boys are standing around looking at it. And the next panel, well, what are you waiting for, Dennis? Margaret says, I think I'll pass, Dennis says. The next panel, old Margaret says, are you afraid of heights? No, Dennis says, and he climbs up on top of this diving board. And the next one, he's out to the edge of it. He says, I'm afraid of depths. How deep it is. I'm afraid of heights, I'm afraid of depths. Thus ends the reading of the cartoons. Now then, a couple more news things here that needs to be read. Driver jumps from car and brakes fail. A Waterloo man's car was rear-ended Friday by another vehicle whose brakes reportedly wouldn't work. That driver told police she jumped out of the car while it was still in motion. Waterloo police responded at 5:12 p.m. to the accident on U.S. Highway 218 at Marigold Drive. Brandon Austin, driver of the car that was hit, was transported to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. Austin, who was heading north, stopped in the roadway while waiting to make a left turn onto Marigold. A vehicle driven by Charlie Sage of Brandon came up behind him when her brakes froze, a police report said. Sage stated that she jumped out of her vehicle while it was still moving because it was not stopped, said Sergeant Brooke Carter. Both vehicles were totaled. No charges have been filed in the case, which remains under investigation. And let's see, today in history, it says 1 year ago, in an effort to show that the country was on course to gradually reopening from coronavirus shutdowns, Vice President Mike Pence delivered a commencement address to the U.S. Air Force Academy's graduating class, telling cadets that they will inspire confidence that we will prevail against the invisible enemy in our time. The daily toll of coronavirus deaths in New York State hit a lowest point in more than 2 weeks. Police in Hong Kong arrested at least 14 veteran pro-democracy lawmakers, activists, and media tycoon on charges of joining unlawful protests in 2019.
Letter to the editor. Volunteer Week. As we observe National Volunteer Week, April 18 to 24, we would like to express our gratitude to all of the individuals that currently volunteer or have volunteered for Waverly Health Center in years past. We could not do what we do without our wonderful hospital volunteers and auxiliary gift garden. Volunteers give support for hospital staff, a smile as a greeting for our visitors, baby blankets and caps for all our newborns, a prayer, a listening ear, help when needing to find your way around the hospital and doing whatever is needed at the time. Volunteering is a choice, a general choice, that these exceptional men and women have made on behalf of our organization, and we're proud to recognize our volunteers' role in improving our patients' experience. Volunteerism is shown to be good for our health. The connections we make and the act of helping others provide meaning and purpose in our lives and help our sense of well-being. So we observe National Volunteer Week this year. We thank our volunteers for their service, empathy, and compassion, and for their selfless dedication to our patients and our mission.
The Post-Pandemic Plaza, Cedar Falls, Gilmore's Pub, a popular eatery in the market, a source for deli and groceries and gifts, have been remodeled and will reopen to the public later this month. Both businesses, located at 5307 Caraway Lane, will boost larger footprints. After nearly 3 years, there have been a few twists and turns in the learning curve at Western Home Communities Jorgensen Plaza. A Caraway Cafe is gone. Gilmore's Pub has been shuttered for more than a year. As part of the COVID-19 response, the upscale restaurant Table 1912 has become the permanent dining room for Prairie Wind residents, while the market has provided carryout and delivery services. In these past few years, we've gained experience, learned, and came to understand better what it means to be open to the public and provide services to both our residents and the public, said CEO Chris Hansen of Western Home Communities. Western Home Communities hit pause when the coronavirus pandemic arrived in Iowa, and the organization grappled with how best to respond and what actions had to be taken to keep residents and employees safe. When Hansen and his team seized the opportunity and made the best of the situation, what all of this has done is show us what we're good at and what we're really good at, he said. The whole focus of the Jorgensen Plaza is to connect with our community as a whole, which is pretty cool, and that's where we want to focus. Mina Reistetter Jorgensen, Plaza Dining Manager, believes the new menu at Gilmore's Pub will attract new customers and satisfy regular patrons. Food will be sourced as locally as possible. Crowd-pleasing beer-battered Hansen's Dairy cheese curds and other appetizers are on the menu, as well as anytime brunch sandwiches, pasta, and steak burgers. A collection of Table 1912-inspired entrees such as pan-seared beef tenderloin and seafood will be offered. The pub will now seat up to 120 people, and an elevated stage will provide space for live music. In addition to the beer and other beverages, Reistetter, a certified sommelier, has developed a curated list of wines that are standouts that people may not have tried, either because of the varieties haven't been available locally or they aren't poured by the glass. We'll pour by the glass, she said, transforming Table 1912 from the natural page C2. Rattle on the paper. Resource Foundation of, no, that's the wrong one, a screen, a still rusty practice. Let's see, we're reading the wrong thing. A restaurant to resident dining was a practical decision, Hansen said. We found out that the table 1912 was a place where to go once or twice a year for a special occasion. That's just not enough traffic to keep it going, so it made all the sense in the world to make the change. Director of Hospitalities Amy Dahl said Gilmore is successful because it was great food and a fun multi-generational gathering place. Wine dinners and other events will be offered. We have lots of ideas for when we bring everything back online, Dahl explained. Table 1912 will provide space for special events, parties, weddings, and anniversary receptions, and private family gatherings and premier corporate events. It's a great opportunity for me and our team to build on why we came here. And now then, Call the Courier. Got to find Call the Courier.
It's on that one there,
buddy. It's on this one here, says she. Why does anyone in the area, or does anyone in the area, spray for mock pear trees? Ever heard of that?
The Courier's master gardener, Melanie Parker, said she has never heard of a mock pear tree or spraying for them. An internet search shows no mock pear tree, although there is a calorie pear and its cultivar, the Bradford pear, that is now considered invasive. Maybe the caller is thinking of a mulberry tree. They root very readily and can become pesky, but many people enjoy the fruit from the tree, as do birds and other critters.
An internet search reveals what's the best way to remove vomit from a mattress?
Okay. An internet search reveals a step-by-step guide to cleaning mattresses vomit by the Slumber Yard team. And tells of things you'll need: old rags, a paper plate, a mild detergent, white vinegar, rubbing alcohol, baking soda, and then how to do it.
So options to it. How old is Steven Spielberg?
Steven Allen Spielberg is 74 years old.
What is the population of Latino Hispanics in Black Hawk and Bremer County?
A U.S. Census data shows that 4.6% of the Black Hawk County population identifies as Hispanic or Latino. The total population in Black Hawk County is more than 131,000, according to the data. In Bremer County, 1.6% of the population identifies as Hispanic or Latino. Bremer County's total population is more than 25,000, according to the U.S. Census.
Mayor of Waterloo has decided to hire someone else in his office to do part of his work. I thought that was up to a vote by Waterloo citizens. Seems like this is a back road to socialism.
Funding for city positions like the chief of staff role is typically decided by the Waterloo City Council. It is possible for the local governments to put the items up for votes from residents on ballots. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart said the chief of staff position will not serve as his assistant. He said the role will help with a variety of administrative duties across the city departments. Residents are able to speak at regular city council meetings or personally contact city officials with concerns.
Who can I contact in Waterloo about the loose gravel where they fix potholes?
You can contact the Waterloo Streets Department. The Public Works Director, Randy Bennett, can be reached at 319-291-4455.
The newest property tax assessment is much too high for no reason. Who can I contact?
You can contact the Black Hawk County Assessor's Office at 319-833-3006.
And that does it for today's reading of The Courier for Sunday, April 18th. Again, Eunice and Tom have attempted to convey some of the things we're seeing in The Courier today. Recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Well, there's still 30 seconds left that we didn't read. We can't say goodbye yet, but One of the things we didn't read in today's Courier was descendant of local settler buried. That's about the only local thing. Ashes, descendant of Waterloo East settlers, or early settlers, are buried this week in Elmwood Cemetery. And let's see, that Nancy Lil said yes. So again, we appreciate you listening to our reading of today's Courier. Thanks again for listening.
Bye.